Today's episode is brought to you by Jarja Media. Jarja Media is actually a marketing company that I run. Whether you're looking for a CRM, a customer relationship manager, I personally built, took my own money, years of my own time to make sure that this was what you needed as somebody in the real estate industry. Also within Jarja Media, if you need websites, if you need a transaction coordinator, like the idea that so many of you are still handling your own transactions when you should be out there creating new business, we offer TCs, transaction coordinators, marketing reps, whatever you need for that, make sure you check out jarjamedia.com, J-A-R-J-A-M-E-D-I-A, jarjamedia.com. At the same time, if you are in need of a coach, if you're in need of training, whether it's one-on-one coaching, whether it's training for you, your office, your managers, or you're just looking to hire someone to speak at your event, you want the event to go really well, make sure you check out jaredjamestoday.com. Anything you need is there. Check these places out.
You are now listening to Today with Jared James.
Hey everyone, Jared James here, and welcome to episode 52 of Today with Jared James. Like I always say, guys, do me a favor if you're enjoying this and leave a five-star review and a written review on the platform that you are listening to this on, and make sure to subscribe as well and share it with someone that you think would benefit from it. On today's episode, as I continue our series on Happy Hour with Jared James, I am fortunate enough to have on the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Chris Stewart. And it's really a good conversation that breaks down how their business works and even goes into like his, the personal side of his upbringing and what he thinks about leadership. And it's really just a really great conversation that I think you're going to enjoy. So sit back, guys, relax, listen in. Like I said, share it with someone else, but enjoy my conversation with Chris Stewart.
Cool. I love it.
That would be a first. I did have a guest show their boxers because they were business up top and mean and real business down below. All right, we are live.
That's funny.
All right, we're live right now. Yeah. Let me just confirm here that this is, and then we'll get going here. Boom, boom, boom. Looks like we're live. Awesome. Hey, welcome everybody. Jared James here. Really excited here today to have with me Chris Stewart, the CEO of BHHS, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. A company that I do a ton with so many of your brokerages and everything else, really around the globe. So first off, man, welcome and thank you so much for being on here.
Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it, buddy.
Where are you coming from right now? Are you in your house?
Yeah, at home in the home office, Northern California.
Oh, God, I hate you. You're in California. I wish. Today it was like 50 something degrees here. And I, you know, for us, that is like, you know, the greatest weather ever because we've kind of gone through, winter is coming, so to say, over these last few months. So anyway, man, how is it, just before we even get into everything, because I've asked everybody this because I'm always interested. How is it working from home? Like, who's at home with you? What is your life or your family consist of?
Yeah. So my wife of 20 years, actually next month will be 20 years. And then we have an 18-year-old daughter, a 16-year-old son, and a 13-year-old daughter. Dude. So it's a lot of fun, you know, and I'm traveling quite a bit,
yep.
As I'm sure you do as well. So, you know, for me, it's just been a complete blessing to be at home. You know, we have dinner every night together, and it's awesome. And, you know, luckily their schools have been super engaged. They've been, you know, doing distance learning since this is the third week. Well, actually, my oldest daughter's on spring break this week, but they've been doing distance learning. So they've been engaged in doing their own thing. It's, you know, it's not like this, you know, raucous and rowdy daytime situation. So that's been nice. And then we come together for dinner typically.
We're, I was going to say, like, are you getting work done? Like, are you actually getting stuff done? Or like, are people coming in and being like, can you just take the garbage out? Can you just do this? Like, how is it working at home?
No, it's been great. It's been great. You know, when I'm not, so my physical office is in Southern California and I live in Northern California. So when I'm not traveling, typically I work from the home office. So typically I'm in the home office at least one day a week, even, you know, during normal travel schedules. So they're pretty used to my, you know, routine. If I'm in the office and got it on, you know, we got the door shut, they kind of know the deal.
So you're used to it. You got it down. So, this is happy hour. So I think our people are going to be disappointed with your answer to my question right now, but what are you partaking of during this happy hour?
You know what? I'm just going to say this, Jared. For anyone that would be unhappy, just use your imagination. I'm not going to tell you what I'm drinking. Just use your imagination.
Our guest yesterday had tequila, so I'm going to tell everybody that's a large, large glass of tequila.
By the straw. Yeah, that's how we do it. That's how we do it at Berks
Bradley. That's how you do it in California. I am, weirdly enough, having a Corona here. For all of you watching right now, guys, like we've done on every other one, this is a happy hour show. The point is to kind of talk to the leaders of the industry and hear from them in a down-to-earth, you know, normal way for people that sometimes, you know, you feel like are either unreachable or you've never talked to them or whatever. And, you know, I wanted the chance to allow everybody else to kind of, you know, hear how I talk to them or how we talk or how, you know, whatever, and just kind of give them that glimpse. So if you're on this right now and you're doing happy hour, take a picture of whatever it is that you are having, put it in the comments. Cheers. Put it down below there.
Cheers,
guys. And at the same time, buddy. Guys, make sure if you know any BHHS agents, tag them below. Go ahead and share this. Hit that share button right there. I think this is a conversation that a lot of people are going to want to hear. So let's get it out to as many people as we possibly can. And, you know, I've said this with every single guest that I've had on, and I really mean it. You know, we've had some people, I won't ever name anybody, but we've had some people that have been upset over the days and whatever, going like, why are you bringing on that CEO? And why are you bringing on, you know, whatever. And, you know, just like I said to you before we started here today, and I'll repeat it to everybody else. Number one, if that's your attitude, you're missing it right now. For me, the reason I'm doing this is it's about the industry. You know, we can get back to recruiting and doing all that kind of stuff and, you know, knowing what's better about our company compared to another. But right now, the whole point of me doing this is just, it's about the industry. Let's learn about the leaders in our industry. Let's hear about their paths. And then let's hear what their thoughts are on what's going on right now, you know, from a perspective that maybe you don't get in an interview every single day, because these are the people who are actually running the industry. So with that being said, man, like I said, I so appreciate you coming on. I'm curious to know, so I know a lot about obviously the company. I work with, you know, a lot of the brokerages with PenFed and C. Dan Joyner, and I had a schedule event with Fox and Roach, which got rescheduled to August when this all kind of went down. When did you, what has your path been? When have you always been with BHHS or did you just kind of come over there? Like, what's your path to where you are now?
Yeah, so I was actually a part of the leadership team at a brokerage company that was in Silicon Valley in Northern California. So Gino Blafari, who started that company, Intero Real Estate Services, I met Gino and some of his key leaders many, many years ago. It's over, golly, it's almost 25 years ago.
So like back when it was Prudential?
Well, no. So Gino, he and some partners built an independent and sold it to what was at the time Syndant. It became Coldwell Banker. And then Gino started from scratch in 2002 in Intero Real Estate Services. That was an independent, you know, organically grown real estate company. But I had met Gino back 5 years before he started Intero because my cousin went to work for him as an agent. So I built a friendship with Gino and some of the other guys there. And so I joined the leadership team in 2008. And carried a number of different responsibilities. And then in 2014, Intero sold to Home Services of America.
Yep.
And so Gino and I transitioned out of Intero and went on to the franchise side of Home Services of America. And that was in 2015. And I held a number of different responsibilities until taking the CEO role last year in January of 2019. So, you know, together, you know, with Gino since 2008 and a part of Home Services since 2015.
Very cool. Very cool. The it's funny because as I'm hearing that, like, well, first off, before I even get started, like, I'd be remiss if I didn't say I was at your event this year. It was one of the, we were talking offline here. It was one of the last events that I got to do this year in Nashville. And you guys did an amazing job all the way down to how the convention center, the Music City Center, was decked out and the colors and all that kind of stuff. Whoever behind the scenes was doing all that stuff, let them know they did an amazing job because it really was a top flight conference. So,
yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So now, you know that one of my most interesting stories, probably my most difficult event of my life, actually involves Berkshire Hathaway. Because I did the Prudential event back when it was in St. Thomas, back, okay. You know, when they were making the transition and they didn't even know that they were going to go Berkshire Hathaway. So I am in the room. I'm doing the keynote with the top 50 brokers in the world or something like that. And they announce to this room that we are no longer going to be Prudential. We don't know what we're going to be. And they like go through whatever. And then they're like, and please help us. Some of you will be invited, some won't. And please help me in welcoming Jared James. And I was, this is a true story. Baby. And I walk out like, did that just happen? Like, nobody's looking at me. Nobody's listening to a word I say. I mean, when I say performing for the wall, I was performing for the wall. And then one after another, I go to the pool later. You know, I basically put my tail between my legs. I go to the pool and I'm like, I guess it could be worse. I mean, I'm at the Ritz, you know, Carlton, you know, in St. Thomas, whatever, you know, it could be worse. But I'm feeling like a piece of crap because I'm like, oh, they hired me to come out here. Did I just do a bad job? Like, I don't even know what, you know, what just happened. And one after another, the brokers are swimming up and they're going, hey, man, great job. Great. Just wasn't the time, but great job. Right. And then shortly after that was when it was announced, because at that point it wasn't going to be Berkshire Hathaway. I mean, they had this marketing plan of what it was going to be and they weren't sure and, you know, whatever. And then shortly after that, it was announced that it would now be Berkshire Hathaway, which I actually think was a great decision because it was a recognizable name that pulled everybody together, and it ended up working out. But I got to see a little bit of the behind the scenes back then, what really went down.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Still think about it. So tell me now, so you're doing this now, did you actually work within the brokerage for Intero back then, or you guys just kind of knew each other?
Yeah, I worked in the brokerage. So initially, Intero had a group of franchises, a franchise company. So it had a collection of offices that it owned and operated. And then in addition to that, a franchise network. So I came in initially to grow and run the franchise company. And you know, from that, I just ended up, you know, as a lot of small business folks do, you wear a lot of hats. And so I, along with all the other guys, we just wore, you know, we just put on the hats you need to put on and ended up doing a lot of different things. And so primarily, you know, working inside of the company and, you know, working with our leaders, helping recruitment, helping retention, helping with our technology and marketing initiatives, and, you know, really just doing whatever I could to contribute to our growth and operation.
Is that what you're doing now or what you did then with Intero?
That's what I did with Intero.
And what has been the biggest difference from working in an environment like that, you know, with a, I mean, really at that point, that was just in California, right? I think it expanded, right?
Yeah, over the course of my time there and our time together before we sold, we got into 7 states in total. So
I was going to say, because I knew people from other states that were a part of Intero.
Yeah, it was kind of like, you know, we were opportunistic, I would say, about where we would franchise. I mean, we were a small kind of upstart, privately funded, you know.
Were you just kind of trying things out? Were you kind of like, will this work? Like, let's put it out there. And
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So we were, you know, kind of a scrappy group and entrepreneurial group. And, you know, so we ended up just attracting people from, you know, all over the place that Gino had a lot of, and the other guys, but primarily Gino was the attractant. He was the, you know, the stimulus. And so we had people in 7 different
like
states.
People.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So that's interesting because that actually, when you said Intero, I was like, oh, because like I said, I know them. I knew people that worked there. Was there one in Texas?
Yeah. So there was one down in, there were several down in Houston. One in Austin.
Yep.
I think those are the only 2 locations in Texas.
Yep, I was aware of them. So my question is this. So that's interesting. You go from that route and then now you're doing what you're doing now, which obviously now, I don't know if you're involved in all the little minor, you know, the little things like you were doing, you were in Intero. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. I'm curious when you look at the stuff that's come up today, I think people would be interested in your perspective on things like, did you see what came out today in the form of like iBuyers and Redfin and all that kind of stuff? Like you probably saw that Zillow and all those stopped doing their iBuyers, stopped, you know, they cut off any kind of transaction going on. Did you see today that Redfin furloughed 41% of their agents, 7% of their staff?
I did see something, but I haven't had a chance to read the, read anything about it. I just saw the headline. I think someone shared it on
Yeah,
tech.
So I saw something.
You know, like
today,
you.
What's that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, call. Like, believe me. The interesting thing is today we saw that Redfin dropped out 41% of, they furloughed 41% of their agents. Any agents who had never met with anybody or whatever, they were just let go. They're giving some kind of like a bonus to leave and then giving them healthcare through the summer or whatever. My real question though, and the reason I was asking you that, is do you guys right now, is there any part of your company that deals with iBuyers or deals with instant offers or anything like that?
You know, I can't speak to every single franchisee's, operation and those that do or don't. I would imagine that, you know, just out of necessity in some of the markets, perhaps there's some people that do either agents, teams, brokers, specific, you know, particular offices.
So you leave it down to each.
It's something that we've done from the top to institutionalize anything from that standpoint.
So they can do it. So the real reason I was asking the question was this. There's always been this theory, you know, when you look at all of the, this is such an overused word. I'm so done with hearing about disruptors and everything. But you hear these different companies and different kind of things that are coming in. And the big question all along was with these companies that were doing things a lot less, a lot different than, let's say, the traditional companies who have done it the way that we've always done it. The question was, how would they handle some kind of like economic meltdown or some kind of like, you know, anything like that happening, right? We're seeing right now, with what just happened and all of the iBuying getting shut down and all like all of that stuff happening, you're seeing these companies now getting affected greatly by that. Do you have any thoughts on that? Did you like what were your thoughts? What was your belief? Do you see traditional real estate moving forward, you know, staying like it is, or do you see it adjusting? Do you see a mixture of the two? Like, what are your thoughts on that whole thing?
Well, you know, I just firmly believe that, you know, if we're not evolving, if we're not innovating, you know, there's no such thing is the static position. So if you're not advancing, if you're not innovating, you are going backwards. And so I don't mind at all, you know, the new business models, the new paradigms. But firmly, I do believe that the real estate client will should continue to dominate what we do. So how do we respond? What is it exactly that they want? And I feel like, to the person that felt like, oh, these disruptors or this iBuying is really going to displace me, I've never had that concern. I've never believed that was, going to really disrupt us. Would it require us to change and evolve and grow our value propositions? Yes. But if it's not that, then it should be something else. Right. There's always something that should be pushing us out of our comfort zone to provide more value to our clients. You know, and I think that's the one thing about our industry that I wish we could change is we need to talk about the real estate consumer more, the consumer experience and what we're doing to add value and get better and be more consultative and advisory than just simply transactional.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the argument that I've been making for years now is when you looked at the other companies like Zillow's and these other that came along, you know, while everybody was getting upset and talking, whatever, they literally were just doing what the consumers wanted. Which in the end, the consumer doesn't care which side, you know, we fall on or not. They just want to make their lives easy, you know? And so that's more so why I was asking the question too, is I'm aware of actually some of the, some of our clients that are, you know, kind of getting involved in the, I don't know if you want to call it the iBuying, but really the instant offer game and stuff, because really when it comes down to it, when they polled sellers, 94% wanted an instant offer, even though less than 1% actually take it, right? They still wanted it there. But I was interested to see like what you thought, like, do you think we're at a place right now? Or do you think that what's going on right now is going to force change quicker in our industry? Like I said on a call earlier today, I'm like, if you weren't tech enabled, if you weren't, you know, whatever, prior to this happening right now, you were completely exposed. Because if you still had, you know, your files in manila folders sitting in a file cabinet in the office, like you're screwed right now and your clients are screwed, right? Because it's not going to be an easy whatever. Do you think that with what's happening right now, do you think it'll kind of expedite the process of change in our industry at all? Or do you think it's going to stay status quo?
I think that it's definitely going to open agents' mindset and perspective around how they interact with their customers and what's available to them. And I think right now, and I see hundreds and thousands of our agents in our network being pushed into new areas of leveraging technology, leveraging FaceTime, leveraging these Zoom calls, leveraging things that they never thought that they needed to learn, and so therefore didn't. And I think in my ideal case, I imagine that, you know, translating into more connectivity between the agents and their clients, whether they're active clients or in their databases and their spheres.
Maybe this makes them more comfortable.
They just become more comfortable shooting a simple video message. How about shooting a simple video message along with a video recording screenshot of a CMA and sending that out unsolicited every single day to five of your past clients? I think that those elements of agents being out of their comfort zone today and what it means to the translates into what they do beyond this health crisis, I think is very promising for our business. And, you know, here's the thing is, just because I go to Expedia and check the prices on airline tickets doesn't mean I don't want to fly Delta. I want to fly Delta because right. I've got, you know, any number of things that are levered up and associated with that relationship that I have with that company. And I think the same thing, just because someone wants an instant offer doesn't mean they're going to transact in that model. And so, again, I just firmly believe that, you know, the nature of this type of transaction will how we interact, will how we transact, will the use of technology, will that change the role of the agent over time? Absolutely, unquestioned. But for those agents that can evolve and expand the value base that they're providing to their clients, I think it's, you know, them embracing this change is just a very positive thing for them.
Has this changed at all for you? Like, are you using Zoom more, or were you already working from home so much that it was already like you were already doing it all the time?
Yeah, you know, all the tools. So here's what I've done is, you know, because typically I'm out in the network physically in front of an audience of agents at least once a week. And I probably do that, you know, 40 weeks out of the year.
Is that in the US, outside the US?
All over, worldwide.
All over.
Yeah.
Huh. And so what I have done though is
now I've replaced that physical in front of them FaceTime at their various events. In fact, you and I were going to do the PenFed event together, right? So what have I done? So I'm doing pre-recorded videos and I'm pushing those out a couple of times a week. I'm doing live cast. So I do fire up a Zoom meeting with three or four of our great agents or leaders, and I'll simulcast that out to all of our social channels. I'm doing that twice a week. And here's the beautiful thing is our franchisees and our leaders across the network, they're doing the same thing. I was on two of those calls today. So I kicked off two company-wide meetings via Zoom today. And so, you know, it's just challenging us to rethink the traditional methods that we've used to communicate. And I think it's going to be very, very valuable for all of us.
Do you think any of it will last? Meaning that the reason why a lot of people didn't do virtual meetings and Zoom meetings and stuff within their company and with their agents is because a lot of the agents didn't adopt, you know, it was foreign to them. It was, you know, whatever, but now it's become completely normal. And it's not abnormal now to have a Zoom virtual meeting and you literally have 130 people, you know, all there with their faces there doing. Do you think it will, like, any of that will last when the sun comes out and they say, go back to work and everything's, you know, whatever. Do you think any companies will adjust and actually do more virtual meetings than they were doing previous to this?
You know, I think the answer is yes, assuming that there's value, right? I think that if there's value there, then it'll last. And I think you just, you know, I think that also though, a lot of our great companies, I know firsthand because I've participated in them, they do a great job with the actual physical events. They do a wonderful job. Yeah. And so I know for those companies that operate in that model, they're going to want to get back to their physical event. They're certainly not going to want to, you know, replace those with this method. However, I do see them blending an experience. So now it's, hey, here's my physical event. I'm doing this sales meeting. And for those of you that can't come on in via live cast, and let's create some tentacles that maybe before now didn't exist. So I do for those that, you know, provide value and provide some thought and some organization and can therefore entertain and interact with an audience, I think it absolutely will continue.
It is different too. Like someone asked me this the other day, they were like, you know, do you think that when this is all over, that, you know, people are going to stop doing live events and big events and, you know, this kind of stuff. And I'm like, guys, look, we're in the moment right now. Everybody's freaking out, whatever. There is something different about live. Like there is something like, there's a difference between going to a concert and watching the concert on YouTube, you know? It's very cool that I can watch it on YouTube, but it's not the same experience. And even from the experience, just from like a culture builder or like what PenFed was doing, right? Where you and I are going in there and they've got all their people there and it's this, you know, this one day rally and whatever. Look, it's great that we have the ability to do this and you can see us and you can whatever. It's not the same thing. Like it's culture, energy, networking, memories, relationships, like all of those types of things. I feel like people are kind of leaving those things out.
Exactly. And you know, look, the reality too is we're, you know, physical relational creatures, you know, and I know for me, I'm a hugger, you know, I'd see people and hug them and, you know, give them knuckles and, you know, all that. I can't imagine not having that level
it's
of interaction.
It's coming back. I mean, look, like I said, this is temporary. It's, you know, you've got this virus right now. Antibodies going to be built up. They're going to have a vaccine that comes out. I'm sure there's going to be a certain amount of time, especially when people first go back to whatever, where they're going to kind of avoid each other and be giving each other elbows. But, you know, it's a matter, it's human nature. Like physical touch is a part of being a human, you know, it's what yeah. separates us from a robot on a computer or a, you know, whatever. So I'm kind of with you with that one. There's another question I want to ask, but before I do that, I want to more clarify. So you are out of California. And obviously your network, your affiliates then are really, you know, all over. Like how many different countries are you guys in?
Well, let me think about this. So we're in US, Canada, England, Portugal, Spain, Italy, Germany, Dubai. Hope I didn't miss anyone. So what is that? Eight countries?
Something like
eight countries?
It was something
like that.
I can't prove you're wrong. I wasn't counting it, but I got you. So my point is, though, is your main role, obviously running the company, doing that, but is your main role to the affiliates? Like on a day-to-day basis, I'm trying to figure out, like, what do you normally do on a day-to-day basis? Is it mainly to those affiliates or is it to the home office? And how has that changed since this all went down? How has your daily schedule changed, if at all? It might not have changed at all.
Well, I mean, it's changed from the standpoint that, like I said, I'm typically on the road, you know, I don't know, 45-ish weeks out of the year somewhere, okay, somewhere. Yeah. And it might be a one night or a four night. It just depends. I'm sure a lot like your schedule. Yeah. But the bulk of my time, Jared, I try to spend in front of our network and or in front of our new prospective partners and franchisees. So that's where I want to spend the bulk of my time. And we have a very accountable structure in terms of our organization, our staff. So we have very regimented, disciplined accountability and activity calls that we maintain. We measure everything. So from the standpoint of, you know, needing to spend a lot of time in front of our staff, so to speak, I don't really have that dependence. You know, and so, you know, my job is to really, you know, create the vision, create the culture, create the energy, and inspire our staff to be infused and energized by all of that for the sole purpose of pouring into our network members, right? We just want to add value to the people that are affiliated with our networks at all levels. And so a big part of my own personal contribution to that is making sure our staff is aligned and has the right vision and resources, and then out just, you know, heralding that message in the various company meetings and kickoffs and award ceremonies and all that sort of thing.
And it's part of why I get the sense like you're about the live. Like I can tell just talking to you, like you're a live guy. You like to hug, you like to, part of that is recruiting, but it's also retention, right? Because when you're there with them, you're building relationships. Like you guys actually see each other, you know each other, you go to happy hour together. Is that part of the whole strategy too? Why it's so important to be in front of people live for you personally?
Yeah, I think, you know, I know that, you know, the scorecard in terms of our industry, you know, is recruiting or retention, or, you know, for agents, it's doing deals or sales volume. I understand the scorecard aspect of what we're doing. But really, for me, you know, I have this burning mission to help people achieve their absolute best. You know, I'm inspired by Gino Blefari, who has really been a great life coach and mentor for me. And We've been together a long time now. And his personal mission statement is to help those, you know, to help people around him, but help those around him achieve their goals faster than they would in his absence. And I'm really inspired by that same mission. So I just want to, you know, just give whatever I can with my energy, my experiences, my perspective, whatever it is I can bring to the table to help, you know, enrich the lives of the people around me. And sure, if that results in people joining us, if that results in recruiting and retention, oh man, absolutely. I mean, that again, that's the scorecard. But at the end of the day, I'm not going into any relationship from the standpoint of anything other than what can I bring to the situation.
Awesome. So it's like
that really just comes from how I grew up, really.
I get it, man. Someone asked me once what my calling on this planet was, and I told them my calling was to help other people get closer to their calling. And that's very similar to what you just said right there. You just mentioned something about your upbringing, so I was actually going to ask you about that. When you look at right now, I mean, you're CEO of this major brand within the real estate industry, right? Which is generally not something when people are in second grade career day that they mark down as their goal, right? Has this been like a gradual climb for you where it's just kind of like happened little by little, or have there been moments in your life that propelled you or could have held you back? Or like, what's that look like for you? What does that journey look like for you?
Yeah. So, you know, it's been interesting professionally. I actually started, I grew up in Dallas and born and raised there and went to school at Texas A&M University. I have a biochemistry degree and I really didn't know what I wanted to do professionally. And just by chance at a career placement kind of job fair thing that A&M was putting on, I hit it off with these two recruiters that worked for this technology systems integration shop that was based in New York City, and just loved their energy and spirit and took the job with this company out of New York City only because it meant that I got to live and work in New York City. I didn't even know what the heck this
So you lived
did.
Over here? That's an hour for me. So you lived and worked in New York City?
I lived in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Hoboken, that's where Wiley & Sons is, the publisher.
Yeah.
They've been trying to get me to write a book for the last 4 years.
Oh, man. I love it. Yeah. So I moved up to Hoboken and took the PATH train over to the World Trade Center every morning and walked downtown to my office on Fulton and Pearl, just a couple of blocks from Wall Street. And so I started my career in technology.
You're living the life.
This is in the mid-90s. Yeah. And then I transferred with that company out to Silicon Valley. And then I went to work for Oracle Corporation. I was a global account executive. And, just did very well and went through the dot-com boom and bust and all the shake up there in Silicon Valley.
You really came from the tech side of things though.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yep. And so, you know, I've always been, it's just always funny when you hear people say how their career is a perfect sequence of experiences that lead them to where they are. And I'm certainly a product of that.
Yeah.
And so, no, I never imagined that this would be where I ended up. But at the same time, every single opportunity I've had throughout my career has been through a personal friendship. It's been outside of that very first job, every single other move I've made has been from a personal friendship that I've developed along the way. And that's always been very, very important to me and really goes back to, you know, I think some of my childhood upbringing is just, you know, just constantly surrounding. And I think that motivates me in the sense that I've always been fortunate to be around people that have poured into me.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, gravitated to that relationship and that affinity that we've had for each other. And so a lot of it is I'm just turning around and doing the same. I just want to pour into the people around me. And, you know, if that attracts all the right people and the right experiences and successes, then man, that makes you feel good.
So in other words, so you've been lucky enough to be, you know, for the most part, surrounded by people in your career that didn't look at you as much as a competitor or as a competition or whatever, but more as a, let me pour into you. Let's, you know, we're in this together type of a thing. And that kind of rubbed off on you. And now you feel like that's your approach in business as well.
I think it's a big part of it. Absolutely.
Interesting. Yep, interesting. Absolutely. Are you like that now? Is that business? Cause I know, like, I completely get that. That is, you know, whatever. How does that reflect itself in your personal life? Like, do you find yourself doing the same thing? Like if you're out at a whatever, like you just want to talk to someone or give them advice or do, or do you just kind of shut down when you're not at work and you're just like, leave me alone?
It just depends. I would say I'm introvert, you know, from that standpoint. I mean, not around my closest friends, you know, I mean, closest friends, we you know, we have fun.
Of course, you get around your buddies, and that's one thing. Yeah.
But I'm definitely not. I mean, look, if someone asked me, in fact, I had a cool experience about 6 months ago, a neighborhood family who I know the parents very well. The kid reached out. I hadn't seen the kid in, you know, many years, and he was a sophomore in college at the time now. And he reached out and just wanted to, you know, have a dialogue and have a mentor relationship. And I told him, absolutely. You know, so if people reach out and ask for input, I'm more than happy to provide it. But I'm certainly not out, you know, trying to critique and coach everybody that I, you know, run into at the coffee shop.
Just personally, like in your personal life, do you find that a lot of times when you're out, you're almost trying to not be the center of attention? Like you're trying to just kind of be quiet in the background?
Yeah. I would say that in general. I'm by no means the life of the party or need to be. Yeah, by no means. Yeah.
No, it's interesting.
I'm an introvert from that standpoint.
Dude, I'm as introvert as they come. It's funny because I do this for a living, and it's, you know, you get on stages in front of thousands of people, you do videos and do, you know, all this kind of stuff. But people are shocked at how many entertainers, people in front of people are naturally introverted. You know how to flip that switch when you need to. It's not fake. It's real. It's a part of you. You know how to flip the switch. You know how to go there. But I know I'm listening to you. And I know that also anytime I've ever shared with my audience how introverted I am, like they're always like, what are you talking about? And it's like, no, I know how to flip the switch. But for the most part, I don't like attention. I don't like when we go somewhere, unless I'm with really good friends, then I can be the life of the party and have, you know, whatever. But when it's just a general sense, it always amazes me how many people in places of leadership or in places of entertainment or in places of, you know, public, you know, whatever, in their real lives are not that way at all. Like they're completely quiet. Yeah. It always shocks everybody who's listening. We're going to get so many comments that are going to be like, what are you talking about?
But yeah.
It's the way it is.
Yeah, it is true. But you know what? I come at this from the perspective of, I don't do this for me. I don't do this for me. I do it for the people that are around me.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I never had any ambitions, you know, on any of my vision boards or goal sheets to be the CEO and, you know, to be this big public speaker. And quite frankly, I love to watch public speak. I mean, I'm fascinated with Tom Ferry and Buffini and, yep. And you and I'm fascinated by it. I'm a student of it. I love it. But I'm from the perspective that I'm trying to learn so that I can provide more value and service to the people that are around me. I don't do this for me, you know, from that standpoint.
By the way, it's my theory. I think too many people get into what I do for a living because, you know, their daddy didn't love them enough, you know, and so they want to get in front of an audience to get attention. And it's the worst reason to get in front of an audience. Right.
Look, I get sick to my stomach before I I go on stage. Yeah. In fact, this year was kind of interesting because we were in that big old exhibition hall. So it's kind of like you're in an aircraft carrier. You're just seeing this endless sea of,
and you got to go up there and look confident. And you've got to like own the room. And meanwhile, you're hoping to see the urine going down your leg.
Oh my God. You're so nervous. But last year we were in Vegas and we were in Celine Dion's Coliseum, at Caesars, where you've got the three levels and people are on top of you, you know, and that is this, oh man.
You know what's crazy, man? Crazy for me? I find it much easier in front of very large audiences than I do in front of small audiences. I'm fine. I mean, I'm fine in either audience, but I mean, like, you'd never know, but I'm just saying, like, it's easier for me. The energy and everything, getting out in front of 8,000 is easier for me than getting out in front of 80.
Oh, not me. I get nervous no matter what.
you know what was a major breakthrough for me? I used to get super nervous and like really nervous, and nobody would know because I would, before I'd go up, I'd basically like say to myself, okay, what would a confident, like, you know, charismatic speaker, like the people I looked up to, you know, coming in, like, what would they act like? And then I would literally say, like, go win the Academy Award for the first 10 minutes, you know, and then you'll feel comfortable and you'll be good to go. And I finally came to a place one day, and I literally, it was just inner dialogue. Like I was talking to myself, and I started thinking to myself one day, I'm like, why am I getting so nervous getting in front of these people? Like they obviously trust me. They all, you know, whatever. And I had this inner dialogue where it's kind of weird. It's almost schizophrenic. I was going back and forth in my head between the two me's. And what it ultimately came down to for me is a super amount, not a normal amount. A normal amount is normal. That's humility. That's knowing you could screw up, but you want to do well. That's normal. The overwhelming, like just freaking out, whatever, comes from a focus on yourself rather than the audience. And so when I finally got to the point when I finally started going, dude, stop focusing on it. It's not about you. You're up there going like, oh my God, what if I don't do well? What if I don't do that? It's not about you. Like when you focus on the audience. So yeah, when all those nerves come from a focus on self. When you focus on the audience and you go, I'm prepared. I'm in my lane. I was made for this. Like, this is what I do well. I know everything that I don't do well, but I was made for this right here. And I'm going to go give them what they came for. And I'm going to focus on them. And my nerves went from where they used to be, you know, here to where I really don't get, regardless of the size, really like, I don't get really like, oh my God, you know, like none of that anymore. There's a normal, hey, you know, you realize you could screw up, you know, but once I started focusing on the audience and what I was going to deliver, and I actually used to think to myself, my mother was an agent when I was coming up. And I actually used to ask myself before I'd go on stage, I would say, no matter how many times I've delivered this keynote, this whatever, I would say, if my mother was in this audience when I was a kid, what would I want this person to deliver right now? How would I want them to deliver it? Like, where would I want them to come from a place of like giving and, you know, just their mentality, right? And that always allowed me, no matter how many audiences that I'm in front of, it always allows me to treat that audience as the first time, not my fifth time this week. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like a big thing, but anyway, hopefully we'll get to redo the PenFed event. I know we're both supposed to be there, so I don't know if they're rescheduling or, what they're doing, but I'm sure we're going to be at the same events. Were you by any chance going to be at the Fox and Roach?
No, but I did do their event last year, and that's a great company. Yeah, what a great company, great culture, awesome people.
Dude, great company. I was on the phone with them. You know how sometimes you talk to people on the phone, and then you're like, you know, you're like, oh, these are my people. We're good. You know, I was talking to them on the phone. Every once in a while, you run into like the, you know, the typical corporate stiff type of thing, and you're like, oh God, you just can't stand it. But then every once in a while you run into people and you start talking to them and you're like, oh, real people. Awesome. Like, this is what I need.
Yeah.
Before I ask my next question, my team just reminded me, we have to do our, announcement here. We've been doing, on all of these here. We do an event every year, the Jared James Advance. This year will be in Nashville. We're doing it in October. If you want to win a ticket to the 2020 Jared James Advance, just like we've done every day, guys, we pick winners every day. Take a picture right now of your screen of us doing this right now, or yourself with the screen in the background. Tag me on here and Instagram. I'm at Jared James Today. If one of my team can put that in the comments, at Jared James Today, tag me, take a picture, and use the hashtag Happy Hour with Jared James. We are going to pick a winner for a free ticket to the 2020 Jared James Advance in Nashville that we do every year. This year, it's going to be in October. 2 full days of immersion and learning and fun and, you know, not being quarantined, which is what so many of you would like right now. So take a picture of the screen, tag me at Jared James Today on here and on Instagram, and use the hashtag Happy Hour with Jared James. Chris, I'm curious right now during this time, you know, obviously everything's changed for, you know, you guys have agents all over. So some are considered essential, some are considered non-essential. You know, for me, when I'm talking to these companies, they're everywhere, and you've got to kind of give a message that applies to, just like when I just did the thing for you guys a few days ago for your network. You've got people essential, non-essential. Have you guys continued during this time recruiting efforts, have you continued your talks with companies and brokerages that you were potentially talking to before this? Has that stuff stalled? Does it continue? How has this changed how you're doing that?
Yeah, we've absolutely, you know, continued from the standpoint of growth and you know, I would say, you know, recruiting is really in the hands and arms of, you know, the franchisees, the local operators, and and whatever they're doing.
And obviously, do they ever say, hey, will you talk to someone or anything? Do you ever get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, absolutely. I'm happy to and do a lot of that. So, you know, from company, I would say really from market to market, I think it's just in a different situation in terms of agent recruitment. But I can tell you, some of our companies are growing because I see them, you know, with all their social posts welcoming their new agents. So some folks are growing like crazy. And I think that, you know, some of the agents are, you know, to the comment, one of the comments you made earlier is, you know, a lot of these agents are probably recognizing, man, I'm with a, you know, maybe a smaller operation and they don't really have any of these tools. And I'm seeing my peers in the, you know, in the market, and man, I'm like, wow, I'm drowning out here trying to figure all this out on my own. So I know that that's going on. And for us on the, you know, on the business development side, we're absolutely all, you know, full guns a-blazing from that standpoint.
I mean, I had many of the leaders from Realogy on here, right? And, you know, Century 21 and, you know, all the different companies. And they were talking about how they were cutting salaries and doing all this stuff because basically they were building up cash and whatever. And the overall point was, and I think the point goes for a company like you guys too, I don't think as many agents and brokerages that are out there understood a month ago how important stability was to them. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It wasn't even something they thought about. You know, that's one of the reasons I brought up what I did earlier about iBuyers, you know, being shut down, Zillow canceling all their contract, Redfin furloughing 41% of their, because people were really making decisions in this industry, not even looking at risk, not even looking at whether something was scalable, not even looking at whether somebody was profitable, not even looking at, they were just going, oh, that percent, and I'm going to do this, and I wonder now with all of this, if there's going to be a little bit of a shift in the industry to more established companies, because I wonder if people are going to start to value stability in a way that they didn't even think about it a month ago. What do you think?
Yeah, it certainly could be. You know, I know that people have short memories, you know, about a lot of things, and so who knows? That's why I've always just in everything that I've done professionally, just try to, do what we do and be the best at what we do, you know. And I mean, you just can't try to bend and bow to every single wrinkle that the industry creates. And you'd hope that the things that you do and stand for and the consistencies that you create, demonstrate value and create some attractant for the people you're trying to recruit. But ultimately, you know, people have short memories, unfortunately.
Does it make it challenging? Because I've had people on here that are, you know, for example, yesterday had Dan Elsey on from Real Estate One, right? And they basically dominate Michigan. Like they're in a different situation where, you know, these are their offices all over the place. So they kind of control what, you know, what can happen and what can't happen. Is there any challenge for you if you want to make a change, or if you see something that's going on and you're like, this has to change, whatever, because you're dealing with the affiliates where really it's up to them whether they want to, or do people kind of listen from, you know, the corporate side? Does it make it more challenging?
Well, I think that leadership in any regard is challenging from that standpoint. You know, always, you know, whether even if you have an employee relationship, you still want people to feel bought in and a part of the decision and a part of the new direction. So I think it's just a fundamental challenge with leadership is getting people to embrace the ideology or embrace the turn that you need to make, whatever that might be. But certainly, yeah, if you've got people that aren't in a direct employee relationship with you, making certain adjustments in the business is always a challenge. But I would say that by and large,
everybody does it, right? Like that's not because they're affiliates. They can't do that, right?
Yeah. But like I was saying, even, you know, sometimes even in employee relationships and employee organizations, you have the same challenges with people, you know, buying into a new direction. But what I would say is that by and large, our franchisees and the agents, the network members, it's a great group. And they recognize that, you know, the things that we're trying to, you know, support and message are for the good of the whole. And so from that standpoint, we tend to get a lot of really great participation in the things that we're doing.
You guys do have, this is why we're having this conversation, is because I really believe it. You guys really do have great partners. I'm partnered with a lot of them. They really are great people. As I said, a few events, well, I'll actually go and hang out. I said it to you beforehand, where I'll go hang out with the people, and I know so many people, and a lot of that comes from the top down. Are you guys 100% franchise based, or do you have any corporate owned offices?
Yeah, there are some of the offices. It's only a little more than a dozen. I don't know, maybe 15 of the companies are owned by Home Services.
In the U.S. or outside the U.S.?
All in the U.S.
Awesome. And
everything that's outside. What's that?
I said, has it always been that way, or is that a more recent thing that's happened?
Well, Home Services has only owned this franchise entity that it purchased. What was the Prudential, right? That you obviously know that, but what was Prudential was purchased by Home Services in 2012. So since 2012, we've only been around just six and a half years. 2013, the brand was, the first sign went into a yard September of 2013.
That's unreal to me. Like literally, I feel like it was just yesterday.
Yeah, I know. Time flies, right? So just to answer your question, from the standpoint of ownership inside the U.S., yes, it's always been that way, but it's only a, 7.5 year total runway of the business of Home Services owning this franchise network. But, to your point, could I see Home Services perhaps making acquisitions outside the U.S.? Yeah, who knows? Probably. You just never know. The neat thing now for me is that Gino Blefari is the CEO of Home Services of America.
Yeah.
So, he and I have, been together and have a great relationship. And so, to be connected with that, organization that tightly and what it means in terms of providing value to our franchise network, both domestically and globally, is really super important. And I think valuable to them.
It sounds like you guys have, you guys really trust each other. Like you guys have that relationship, where if that were to come up, you'd be able to have that conversation. Should we do it? Shouldn't we do it? And it's not like a big power struggle. It's like it sounds like you guys have that relationship.
Precisely. Yeah. Yeah. We always describe, and I think this should be the same for, agents or teams that we're recruiting or franchises that we're looking to recruit or buy, is, where's the benefit? Where's the lift? And I always describe it as a 2 + 2 = 8 scenario. And so I just encourage all of our business development folks and recruiters is go out there and find relationships that we can add, incremental value to, how can we help them incrementally, or exponentially rather, not incrementally, exponentially, grow their business in one form or another.
So during this time right now, obviously unprecedented times and, like I mentioned, some of your affiliates are considered essential businesses. Some are considered non-essential businesses. Some that are considered essential businesses, the agents still don't even want to go out right now. That was happening a lot in various states. I saw that going on. It's looking like some of the news is starting to turn right now, which is awesome. Like I've been waiting for that to happen. What do you think agents and brokers should be focused on a daily basis right now during this time? Like, where do you think they're focused?
I tell you, so I'm doing exactly what you're doing, Jared, with your clients. I'm doing with our agents. So I'm hosting, this type of format, live cast twice a week and other pre-recorded messages. And I can tell you one of the very first messages that I shared was in every market, good or bad, we should be completely and totally in service of others.
Yes.
We should be completely and totally in the service of others. And so right now, I think that that's the case. I'd love to see every agent, not just ours, but the whole industry, just, completely be in the service of their neighbors, their clients, their contacts. Let's make sure everyone understands the relief stimulus, because we should understand it ourselves, by the way, very well. We should understand, the mortgage relief, if that's the case. And we shouldn't be pushing any messages about how many deals we closed and our ranking and, anything like that. It's like, hey, how can we add value? How can we as an industry move in the direction of complete service, humble service, and help families and individuals get through all of the hardships that have been, you know, presented to them by this crisis. And, you know, so that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, we've got to be mindful of our spirits and our mindsets is, you know, yeah. I encouraged in my message this week is, look, if anything that you can do this week that you can do in a phone call instead of an email or text, pick up the phone and call somebody, because you could be that, you know, that piece of light that that they need, that boost of confidence they need in their personal situation. You know, we have a leader that shared in my live cast on Friday. He said, you know, the light is the darkest, the light is the brightest when it's the darkest. And so we've got to carry our shine, you know, as agents, we got to carry that shine into our relationships with our contacts and customers, because, you know, it's a tough time.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, we couldn't be any more in alignment. I mean, when I shared with your network, my very first point to them was you need to change your mentality, your mindset right now from a sales mentality to a service mentality. What differentiates real estate people from a sales perspective to so many other salespeople in an area is that ultimately top producing realtors are supposed to be community leaders too, you know, where that's not really expected from a lot of other sales jobs. And yet that's really what's kind of expected by a realtor. And you know, for a lot of people, this is an opportunity right now to show who they are. Like, leaders are going to lead right now. Winners are going to win. You got to step up, right? Really quick here. Right now, during this time, what are you reading or watching or listening to? Like, what do you on a regular basis read, watch, and listen to for inspiration or to stay on top of what's happening? Or, you know, I see behind you, are those books behind you?
Yeah. Yeah. So this, you know, I've read all of these books at least once. This is kind of the go-to library for me. I've got another in my game room, another set of books in my library, but, you know, I reread the Storyteller Secret. I just reread that and put that back up on the shelf. You know, I tell you what, for me, and you know, this is one of my big frustrations with our industry is, you know, I hear so much people say, you know, hey, I've got this goal or, you know, this daily activity to read something or do this, but they don't even take time to read what's specific about our business, yeah. Right? People are looking for, you know, how do I get some clarity on these relief stimulus packages? You know what you do? You read. That's yeah. How you get the guidance that you need, you know? So I really just, you know, in times like this, I just try to get very focused and deep on our own subject matter, you know, and just try to be as up to speed as I can. You know, we did a town hall for our broker owners. It's been 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right when this first started on the SBA program, on the you know, anticipated relief programs, what's happening, how to get engaged. We had thought leaders coming in from the network sharing best practices and getting people organized. So, you know, I would just encourage as much of that as possible is, you know, be in the guts of your business. Be yeah. In the guts of what's going on right now. Read the emails from your company. I yeah. Guarantee you, wherever you work, for the most part, you work for a good company. They're messaging. Your leaders are messaging you. They're giving you things that, you know, you should be using to inspire your activities. Read that. Like, read the communication that's yeah. Going to help you in your business right now, you know? And then for me, Jared, I say is I'm just very, I love music. I love listening to music. Yeah. So I listen to music in the morning.
What kind
during
of music?
Some just reflective time. Oh, all kinds, man.
Gangsta rap.
Rap, hip hop. I just threw Zach Brown Chicken Fried. Zach Brown Chicken Fried. Pitbull and Akon had some collaboration, like this Latino jam that was awesome. Then I threw the new one from Drake, the Toosie Slide.
No, you did not. Stop it right now. Yeah. Someone just fed you that behind the scenes and they said mention Drake.
No, I'm gonna show you right now. I'm going to show you right now how we do it over here at the Stewart household.
Oh my God.
So I'm going to show you.
You heard it here. You heard it here first, folks. Okay.
Okay. So this is the bottom of my most popular playlist. Look at those songs on the bottom. Those are the ones I just added.
Oh my God. Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. Right there.
You, Justin Bieber.
You know,
wait a second. You're a believer.
Oh yeah. Intentions, that's Quavo. Oh man,
you're a believer.
I'm a believer, man. Absolutely.
Well, you just made some friends in my office. I'll tell you that right now, because I've got a lot of young people that work in my office, and we've got a few believers.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I just, you know, I love the creativity and the and the energy of musicians. I love that. You know, I love to watch the video. So, you know, to me, that's the thing, is just keeping your mind just so sharp and
you go to concerts
and positive.
What was the last concert you went to?
I don't really, because I don't like the crowds. I'll be honest. I hate crowds.
I'm not a crowd guy either. Dude, I hate crowds.
Yeah, my people.
Yeah. And like, you and I are surrounded by people all the time. I hate crowds. I don't like being in crowded places.
Yeah. I mean, I love our events and being around our people, and like I said, hugs and pictures and all that. But a bunch of strangers and all, you know, bouncing all over you. I have no desire.
You're not about that life. You're not about that life.
No.
So now, do you actually read physical books, or are you Audible, podcast, what?
All physical books. Yeah, all physical books. I do enjoy podcasts, you know, so, we're doing a lot of things right now with, different marketing strategies and different, so I listen to a number of different podcasts on digital marketing, on commercial real estate. I've been listening to some commercial real estate.
Isn't it
franchises
amazing what's available? Isn't it crazy what's available?
Oh,
for a run, put in a podcast, and I'm listening to stuff that I'm like, how is this just so readily available? Like, you would have to spend thousands of dollars and go to school for 2 years, 15 years ago to learn this. How is this possible?
I know. It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah.
That's awesome. So in closing here, man, because I know you got to get running. Yeah. And, we're going to take this, just speaking of podcasts, we're going to put it on YouTube, on my YouTube channel. We've already put the other interviews up there. We started a whole playlist, Happy Hour with Jared James, with all the different people that we've had on. And then we're going to take the audio. We're going to throw it up on my podcast, Today with Jared James. And so that'll get some play there too. If people want to connect with you, how can they connect with you? Do you want them to connect with you? How can that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. Please do. At HSF. So Home Services Franchise, HSF, Chris Stewart. And it's STU.
Chris Stewart.
Yep, and it's STUART. Yep.
Okay, that's easy enough. Hang on here 1 second. Hey, guys, if you enjoyed this, do me a favor, hit like, leave a comment, and say thank you to Chris for doing this. You know, we do this, and it's so down to earth. We're having fun. He's showing us Drake, you know, whatever. But I think it's really important for you guys to understand that, you know, these are the CEOs of the major brands in our industry. And they're taking their time out to share with you and to calm your nerves and give you a little bit of the backstory so that you can hear, you know, from directly the people that are actually, running this industry, so to say. So do me a favor, say thank you to him in the comments. Make sure you connect with him. Last time, if you want a free ticket to the 2020 Jared James Advance, or a chance, doesn't mean you're gonna get a free ticket. We're gonna pick one person, take a picture of the screen, tag me on here and on Instagram at Jared James Today. Again, at Jared James Today with the hashtag Happy Hour with Jared James. My team's going to pick one winner over the next 24 hours. You're going to get a free ticket to the 2020 Jared James Advance. And quite frankly, I can't think of an advance we've done that was more important than the one that we're about to do, in October, because of what everybody's going to be coming through. We'll have a ton of Berkshire Hathaway people there too, which is always really cool. So guys, make sure you do that. Say thank you. If you enjoyed this, you thought there was some good content, hit share right here on Facebook. Not share, C-H-E-R. Chris probably just looked at his playlist to see if I was talking about the other share. I am talking about S-H-A-R-E. Share this, guys. Let's get this out to as many people. I don't care what brokerage or what, you know, company people are from. This is about the industry right now. So we appreciate you guys tuning in. I've got some other announcements coming soon. We've got some pretty big guests coming on, which will be kind of cool, but I can't announce it yet. So I'll wait to do that. But guys, thank you, Chris, man. Hang on here 1 second, but thank you so much for coming on. That was a great conversation. I appreciate you being willing to share with everybody.
You got it. Thanks for having me, Jerry. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right, y'all. Y'all have a good one. Thanks for listening to my podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, there's a few things that I'd like you to do. Subscribe, share this with someone you know that you think will also benefit from it. Leave a review on the platform that you're listening on, and do me a favor, go over to connectwithjared.com. Connect on all the platforms I'm on, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, YouTube, all these places. And do me a favor, leave me a message, let me know what you enjoyed about the episode, and more importantly, let me know what you'd also like to hear about moving forward.